welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is Dr. Walden Rhines, former CEO of Mentor Graphics, which is now part of Siemens EDA, and current CEO of Cornami. Wally is also the executive sponsor of the Semi Electronic Design Market Data Report, which is what we'll talk about today. Welcome, Wally, and thank you for joining us.
Glad to be here, Daniel.
So Semi and the Electronic Design Alliance have a very effective program to collect actual sales data from almost all the EDA companies by product and geographic category in the world each quarter. They've been doing this since 1995, so there's a wealth of information out there that comes from tracking the trends. We blog the quarterly reports, and Wally, they've just released the Electronic Design Automation Market Data Report that covers all of 2021, so let's talk about that.
Okay, it's been a terrific year for EDA and the IP industries. It, worldwide, EDA revenue growth was 15.8%. That's only 0.02% below the highest growth rate ever recorded, which was in 2011 when we were recovering from a dramatic weakness. On a quarter-to-quarter basis, fourth quarter 21 showed 14.4% growth to $3.5 billion. It's been a great period for the EDA industry, and that fourth quarter run rate takes us very close to a $14 billion industry.
Oh, that's amazing. You know, this is my 40th year in EDA. I'm really happy to see it. We've worked very hard. So were there specific product areas of EDA that were particularly strong?
There were. You've heard a lot about the growth of EDA purchases from systems companies, and 2021 seems to affirm this. For the year 2021, printed circuit board and multi-chip module and packaging software achieved a new record for annual revenue growth at 15.1%, slightly surpassing the record set in 2019. This is a segment of EDA that used to be considered mature. 15 years ago, 5% would have been a great year for PCB and MCM. Now we're seeing mid double digits. And the indications are from systems companies that it's more than just PCB. We also saw a lot of strength in CAE, or computer automated engineering, which is the front end. So you see a lot of systems companies will do front end chip design and then outsource the physical layout of those chips. Now, in addition, silicon and intellectual property achieved the highest ever recorded growth at 23.9%. That eclipsed a previous record set in 2006. Also, worldwide services revenue set a new record in both growth rate and in total revenue dollars, growing 43.1% for the quarter and 19% for the year. Usually, we associate strong services growth with periods of industry growth when it's hard to hire enough new employees and companies revert to using contract engineers. Services revenue tends to decline when a recession is approaching as companies pull more of their contract work in-house. So this is a very positive indicator in fourth quarter 21 and gives no indication that we're heading into a period of weakness.
Great. So what about geographic trends? Which parts of the world were strongest?
Well, North America certainly takes the lead in this case, with strong growth in all the major categories we track. That's CAE, computer automated engineering, printed circuit board design, IC design, and silicon intellectual property. For the fourth quarter 21, it was the only region with positive growth in all major areas, and for the full year, North America and Asia were the two regions with positive growth.
What about China? They've been a strong force in the past. With all the political tensions, are they continuing to be strong purchasers of EDA software?
Well, there has been some weakening in this fourth quarter of 2021, the first time we've seen that. We actually saw negative growth in China EDA sales, but the total year sales were plus 26%. So it's too early to call this a trend. It's just a single quarter. But you know, this is something that people have been watching for, because China is now $977 million of annual revenue, far greater than any other country in the Asia Pacific region. And I know a lot of concern exists that the subsidization of EDA startups by the Chinese government will lead to a decrease in the market share of US-based companies, who currently have 97% of all worldwide EDA sales. And that's probably likely to happen. We'll see if this was an early indicator in fourth quarter with the decline in China.
But looking at specific product segments, are there any other things to note in the recent results for worldwide revenue?
Well, within the CAE, or computer automated engineering, category of front-end tools, there was overall growth of 11% in the fourth quarter to over $1 billion. That makes it a very healthy quarter for front-end tools. Logic verification was particularly strong at 15.4%, particularly RTL simulation at 20.5%. Formal verification was also strong at 12.2%. And I've already mentioned the strength in PCB design for the quarter as well as for the year. The strongest areas in PCB design were package design and analysis tools. Physical design and verification was relatively weak as a category, actually minus 2% for the quarter and only 7% growth for the year. And IP was exceptionally strong at 25%, with the reporting companies, that is the EDA companies, at 44% versus the rest of the IP industry, including ARM, at only 10%.
What's the bottom line, Wally? Does this report affirm a healthy future for design of electronic systems and components?
I think so, at least for the near term. Companies increase their purchases of EDA and IP software because they believe there will be a growing market for new electronic components and systems. This report looks like a vote of confidence for new designs and new product companies.
I agree. It's been a great year, and I see a good year coming as well. But, you know, world events certainly change things. And, you know, so let's talk a little bit more about China. You know, one thing that I know in China, and I work with these companies, you know, there are big EDA companies in China now. Primarius, which used to be ProPlus, and I think they're going IPO. Empyrean, Corrigan, and S2C EDA, who I used to work closely with, they're also going IPO. So there's a lot more EDA content in China. And, you know, in China, if you're buying tools, you had better choose a Chinese company. If you don't, you better have a very good reason not to.
Yeah, there are political elements in the market trend. We'll see how that goes. China had a national thrust called Panda software, focused on PCB and some other things. Many years ago, over 20 years ago. It just didn't take off. It's hard to break into a new field, but I think, as you point out, the investment by VCs in China, helped along by the government, has stimulated a lot of activity. And so we're really seeing the first broad-based IPO of a company. And I'd also note that in an area like place and route, where very complex software and U.S. companies, particularly Cadence and Synopsys, seem to dominate, the acquisition of Avatar gave China companies certainly a very solid base, and we'll have to see how that evolves in the future. Of course, there's nothing in the ESDA report that reflects anything by individual company. All they report upon are the aggregates. So all of this color comes from my own personal view of issues going on in the industry.
So do you think the China EDA companies are reporting to you guys?
No, they are not. But their revenue is not substantial either. Even the one you mentioned, which was ProPlus, I've forgotten the current name, going public, even they don't move the needle very much in the worldwide sales. But of course, we don't really know that until they publish an S1 or reveal their revenue by some other means.
Yeah, Pro Plus is now called Primarius. You know, they said they're on SemiWiki. And, you know, Corrigan and S2C EDA, they are not necessarily EDA companies per se, but they do prototyping and emulation. In fact, Corrigan has a new system that we talked about on a podcast previously that's both prototyping and emulation in one box, you know, and can sit on a desk. And I think S2C also has an emulator. So, I mean, that's actually big revenue because it's hardware. But, I mean, you used to be in this business, the prototyping and emulation business in Mentor. Do you think China really has a shot at winning over business here and in China with those systems?
Well, at a minimum, they have the U.S. to thank because named entities like Huawei, like SMIC and others are not permitted, or U.S. companies are not permitted to sell to them anymore, and they need emulators. And you can't pirate an emulator over the internet. An emulator is a piece of hardware. So basically, that embargo has forced China to develop its own emulation infrastructure. And so I would expect they will do so.
Yeah. And most of those emulator people, I've met some of them, they come from the U.S. You know, they're from Synopsys and Cadence and different companies. So that's interesting. So what about the fabless bubble over in China? I mean, you and I have been tracking this. There are thousands of fabless companies now who have bought tools. How many fabless companies do you remember? Have you been keeping track?
So the last time I saw a count, it was 15,000 plus. Once again, this is not an ESDA input. This is just my own. But that 15,000 plus tended to be inflated some. The story that we got is that when the subsidies came along, the subsidies were based on a certain maximum per company for a startup. And so it became very popular in China if you had a successful startup to simply divide it into its contributing divisions and form several companies. The ownership stayed the same. The same shareholders now own stock in three different companies, but each one could get a subsidy. So that made it a little harder to say, you know, what are the true number of companies? But as you know, whatever it was, 15,000, even if it's only 5,000, that's an enormous number of startups, far greater than what exists in the U.S.
Yeah, you know, I was suggesting there was a bubble coming probably 3 years ago. So maybe that's going to come true, and I'll be right at some point in time.
Well, as long as the government doesn't pop the bubble, I think you're okay. They're okay, but yeah, governments do have a way of changing their programs over time, and that can cause a big impact.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Chinese government seems to be actively involved in this, so you're probably right. So how is the war in Ukraine affecting the semiconductor market, Wally?
Well, first of all, this data is fourth quarter 2021, so that was before there was any real activity. So there's nothing in the data to suggest anything. But I think in my own discussions with people across the industry, the view is that Russia spends very little on EDA. That will not have any noticeable impact on the worldwide revenue numbers for EDA, not even as much as when Huawei was put on the entity list and dropped out as a very major EDA customer. But what you could see is the impact of design engineers who work in Russia. Russia has very talented mathematicians and physicists, and most of the EDA companies take advantage of that. And now it's not clear to me how they'll be treated. I assume they'll keep paying those people, but I don't know what the conditions will be on exchange of information or any other bottlenecks relative to the execution of program developments by Russia-based employees.
Yeah, well, Ukraine the same way. There's quite a few people in Ukraine developing tools and semiconductors. I used to work with a big group for Cypress Semiconductor in Ukraine, and they were doing automotive products. But there's certainly disruption on that part. And
well,
also
you're absolutely right. Ukraine is a major software development center. The engineers are very skilled. You may have read in the paper the hacking they've been able to do or the defensive actions on computers since the war started. And then on top of that, I too was on a board where we had our largest development organization, a company called GlobalLogic. I was based in Kiev. I've been there. Very sophisticated development. The engineers there are paid very close to what engineers in the U.S. would be paid. And so that is, those people obviously are disrupted from whatever they were doing. It's just that I'm not aware of EDA companies being heavily dependent, but there are certainly a lot of other product development companies that are going to be affected by the disruption in the Ukraine as a result of the war.
Yeah, and of course, you know, we're seeing semiconductor disruptions, right? Because Russia does buy semiconductors. In fact, GPUs are now more freely available and their prices are dropping because Russia was a big, or is a big cryptocurrency mining operations all over Russia. So they're no longer able to get the CPU and GPUs for that. And, you know, TSMC's largest customer, Apple, just announced that, you know, they're going to cut their iPhone forecast by 20%, maybe not having directly to do with the war, but certainly somewhat involved. But TSMC came out and said yesterday that they're not going to change their forecast or their CapEx spend. They're still moving forward.
Yeah, they apparently took action early to inventory things they needed, but you know, the supply of neon gas, a large share of it comes from Russia and the Ukraine, nickel, critical element, palladium, other materials are certainly being affected by the activity here, and it's going to affect the release of electric cars as well, because electric motors are so dependent upon the supply of materials that come out of Russia and the Ukraine.
Yeah, and you know, with gas prices and inflation, and now everybody's going back to work just in time to pay the extra gas price. You know, here in Silicon Valley, you know, we're unmasked and we're back at work. In fact, the employers are really pressuring people to get back in the office. And so, yeah, that's going to change the dynamics this year. Certainly, maybe less semiconductors. Do you think it's time that we finally end the semiconductor shortage narrative?
Well, it's not showing up really. I think what will happen is the automotive problems will be solved sooner than the overall supply, and that's what gets all the visibility. But certainly with these massive investments that have been announced, TSMC, Intel, Samsung, and others, it's bound to cross over sometime. And while there are some saying, no, it looks like it could be tight through 2023, I'm in the school that says late this year, early next year, we'll cross over. And the funny thing is that it doesn't ever happen smoothly. It's like the soft landing for a recession. No one's ever seen one because whenever you have an excess of supply and demand imbalance, it very quickly shifts over, and what happens is average selling prices fall precipitously, and that reduces the TAM, reduces profitability, and so it doesn't take long, although I have to say that the world is a little more shielded than it was in the past in the sense that products are not as multi-sourced as they once were, and so they're not quite commodities, so the ability to demand lower prices by customers is not quite so great. And the other thing is we have a much more consolidated memory industry with really three major suppliers with most of the volume, and they have been very disciplined about their capacity additions, and that's a third of the total market. So we're really only talking about the other two-thirds. But as you note, it will come. It always does. Malcolm Penn of Future Horizons is predicting it will be a very big crash. Others are saying it'll just come back into balance. I'm in the school that says we're going to see some real price degradation when it occurs, and that it's going to occur within the next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, I agree, you know, especially with all the fab builds that we've announced. And of course, announcing them and doing them is two different things. I mean, there have been fab shells empty for years, you know, Intel in Arizona, and I think Micron had one. So I'm sure we're going to build a lot of fab shells, but equipping them and getting chips out of them is two separate things. But Coincidentally, I spoke to Malcolm this morning, and he's even more insistent now based on the recent things. So he'll have a note on that in a little bit. Anyway,
Malcolm has the longest history in the industry of anyone who is still publicly active in reporting data. So you need to listen to him. He's seen a lot of cycles.
Yeah, 50 years. So that's a lot. So, Wally, thanks again for your time. And thank you, everyone, for listening in to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast. And have a good day.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening, and have a great day.